Next, we have Ombres versus City of Palm Beach Gardens, Florida.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Andrew Harris on behalf of the plaintiff here, Jacqueline Ombres, who is the personal representative of the decedent, Kaylee Claypool. The issue here before this court, it's a one issue, a narrow issue. Does the City of Palm Beach Gardens, do law enforcement agencies have a duty to passengers who are uninvolved in a crime, uninvolved in a chase? Does the city have a duty of reasonable care to the passenger? There is no case in Florida, which has, this is an issue of state law, there is no case in Florida which has ever addressed this issue. The Florida Supreme Court has held there is a duty of care owed to innocent bystanders, third parties, who are outside the vehicle. That's a case called Brown, what I label as Brown 2 in the briefs, because it came up from the lower intermediate district court of appeal. What has been held by Florida District Court of Appeal decision is that there's no duty of care owed to the driver, and that, or no common law duty of care owed to the driver. And that was expressed as a matter of public policy. I'm not here to address that issue, whether that was correctly decided. That's neither here nor there.
I'll tell you what I think our problem, I can't speak for my colleagues, but what my problem here is, I mean, these are awful, tragic facts. And there's, I mean, for an officer who has previously been cited for doing exactly the same thing, to engage in that kind of behavior and cause the death of your client is awful. But we are bound by Florida law. And Fisher seems to me to preclude the outcome that you are suggesting. And so maybe you want to address that.
Sure, Your Honor. First of all, Fisher did not address, certainly Fisher involved a passenger. There's no question about that. The court framed the issue as to whether there was a duty of care to a person involved in the chase. We don't know what the Third District Court of Appeal meant by that, but what we do know here is that the decedent, Ms. Claypool, was not in any way involved in the chase. But what we also know there is that the court only addressed whether there was a common law duty of care.
Let me stop you for a second. On this record, what is the evidence that she was not involved in the chase?
Okay, well, all we know she had no involvement. There's no evidence that she drank. There's no evidence that she did drugs. There's no evidence that she wasn't even aware that her boyfriend of a few weeks was engaged in any unlawful activity. All we know is she was at her mother's house. She was at his father's house, her boyfriend's house. We know nothing else about her in the record that she in any way that she got in the vehicle with her boyfriend and went on her way.
But so, what about Fisher's refusal to place what it calls the overwhelming burden to perform the impractical, if not impossible, task of determining, even if they knew a passenger was in the car, whether that passenger was a participant in the crime? Doesn't that eliminate the very analysis that you're talking about under Florida law?
That very well, for the common law duty of care, I'm not here to challenge their holding as to the well, I disagree with them, but I'm not disagreeing that the Intermediate District Court of Appeal addressed the common law duty of care. But there's no discussion in there of the statutory duty of care whatsoever. We don't know if the plaintiff raised it. We don't know if the Third District Court of Appeal was aware of it. I'm not certainly demeaning the court in any way whatsoever, but Florida law does hold that when an issue is not addressed in an opinion, it's not binding in any way. That decision would not be binding within the jurisdiction of the Third District Court of Appeal as to whether there's a separate, independent statutory duty of care, which we have directly raised here. And interestingly, in that opinion, the court cited to a Texas Supreme Court decision, which had held that there was a statutory duty of care on a statute which is eerily similarly worded as to the Florida statute here that we have, that you have a duty to exercise due care for the safety of all people on the highway. And so if anything, the Third District was saying, that's a separate duty of care, a statutory duty of care. The Third District didn't say, we disagree with the Texas Supreme Court decision. We simply don't know if the Third District was ever confronted with that issue. So
go
ahead, Your Honor.
I appreciate that. Doesn't the statute you're citing say that the officer is not relieved of a duty that they already had, I think that's a little bit different. Doesn't that presuppose a duty in the first place?
Well, that's a matter of statutory interpretation. Our contention is that the plain language there, the legislature there, you're reading from the statute correctly. I have it right in front of me. It does not relieve an officer from the duty to, with due regard for the safety of all persons on the highway. But that the duty does exist there in the first place to exercise. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It's okay. Where does the duty come from? Because in Bryant, the Florida court said that statute was, quote, not intended to create a duty where none exists, but to preserve any that do exist. So in order for us to be able to rely on that statute, we would need for you to demonstrate that a duty pre-existed that statute. So where would that duty come from?
If you disagree with me that statute creates it itself, and I understand that that's what Your Honors are telling me, I disagree respectfully. But that goes back to Brown.
And I'm sorry to interrupt, but yeah. Just so you can address this part of it when you're addressing it, it's not that I disagree or agree. It's we are bound by what the Florida courts have held, unless we can find persuasive evidence that they would decide to the contrary, right? So that the Florida Supreme Court would decide to the contrary. This is what a Florida court has held, and so unless we can find persuasive evidence that it would decide to the contrary, I think that we are bound by that. So I don't know if you want to address that as well.
Sure. Bryant, which Your Honor, Judge Grant mentioned, that was one sentence in a case which dealt with a driver, not a passenger. So my contention is the Fifth District Court of Appeal there, their reference and the rest of the decision there is referencing common sense holds that we would not, that there would not be a duty of care owed to a person who committed the crime, i.e. the person who engaged in the felony of leaving unauthorized police, police sirens up. So my contention is that that's what the Fifth District was getting to here. But putting that aside, we go back to Brown in the Florida Supreme Court. The foreseeable zone of risk which is created whenever that goes back to McCain and goes back to Brown 1 and Brown 2, which right there, the same language that the Florida Supreme Court in Brown addressed there, has the defendant created the foreseeable zone of risk. If they have, they owe a duty to lessen and diminish the risk. Here, all the driver, and I'm certainly not here to defend the driver in this case, but he was going 10 miles per hour over the speed limit when the officer has a right to make a lawful stop. But this is not a situation where the driver was going 100 miles per hour and then the officer put on his lights. The officer had no legal right to engage.
I completely agree with you on that. But the problem is that doesn't, I'm not sure that helps us to get anywhere with respect to your client. I mean, I don't think there's any excuse for what the officer here did, which is one of the troubling things about this case. But we are still bound by Florida law, and so.
Sure. Okay, and I would return us back to Brown and the foreseeable zone of risk. The other part of the equation here is that the city of Palm Beach Gardens' own guidelines say you have a duty to exercise due regard. It doesn't say where it otherwise exists or that you can exercise discretion. The city of Palm Beach Gardens has a guideline that the officer here, and I understand, but the city itself has stated that there's a duty of due care that is owed to all people on the road, not just third parties. And the underlying state court judge's case was first in state court. She's now sadly just died a few months ago, Judge Sasser. But as she noted there, under the defendant's reasoning here, there would be no duty owed to children in a school bus. One of my children went on a school bus this morning. There would be no duty of care owed to her if there was a high-speed chase which an officer initiated to the driver. There'd be no duty owed to kidnappers. And the defendant says that's not our facts. I'm sorry.
That's arguably distinguishable, right? I mean, because then the officer should know, there's no question that the children in the school bus are innocent and not participating in the school bus driver's activity, as opposed to what Judge Grant was referring to, where the officer would have to conduct some kind of analysis on the fly about, you know, a passenger in a car with just two people driving in it. How are they to tell whether the person is innocent or not?
I know these are not our facts, but a person held hostage in the trunk, or a child where the officer, if the issue is not whether the officer knows or should know of a passenger in the car, The question then is, but why is the duty of care owed only to third parties outside the vehicle, but people, the foreseeable zone of risk? The Florida Supreme Court has never given any indication that there would be a distinction. They certainly didn't in Brown. They haven't in McCall as to the four independent sources. I realize my time is up. The four independent
sources. I have a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Now, what is the Florida statute that you say, as opposed to the common law, creates the statutory duty of care?
Well, there are two, 316.172, and I believe it's 316.126. Those are the two Florida statutes which express the...
I'm looking at your complaint. And it has, I don't see any reference to those statutes. I mean, it looked like you brought a common law negligence, but I'll go back and look again. You don't need to look right now. I mean, I'm just alert you to that.
Okay, thank you. I'll address that.
We can distinguish Fisher because that was common law. Fisher doesn't refer to the statute. So I looked at your complaint. I don't see but one negligence count, and it looks like common law. So anyway, thank you. That answers.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Scott Alexander, and I'm the attorney for the City of Palm Beach Gardens in this action. I intended to start today by reiterating the fact that this court, as the trial court did, should follow the law of the state of Florida and the intermediate appellate courts, and I think Your Honors have already addressed that issue with opposing counsel. That is exactly what Judge Middlebrooks did in this case.
Let me ask you a question. I think this case is really troubling. And I wonder what, if any, I mean, it might just be there is no remedy, but what, if any, remedy would be available to Ms. Claypool's estate here?
Well, the answer is because Florida courts have indicated that there is no legal duty, there is no remedy. And sometimes we have that in law, that not every wrong comes with a remedy. And I did want to point out, Justice Rosenbaum, that this officer had not previously engaged in a high-speed chase and been disciplined. It was actually subsequent to this incident, and the appellant did amend their brief to indicate that. So it was afterwards. So this officer...
Did he have a remedy against the driver of the vehicle if he had insurance?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so she's got a remedy. It's against the wrongdoer who is driving this vehicle too fast.
Right, and sometimes I think we talk very
practical. Was there insurance here? I don't know that it matters for this case, but
right.
Do we know whether this driver had insurance on this car? She gets in the car with somebody who she knows, and they go crazy because
right.
They don't want to be stopped. He had his reasons why he didn't want to be stopped.
Mr. Geese was had no license at the time. He's
okay.
A habitual offender, prior
right.
DUIs. And he was driving his father's car, so my understanding is there was insurance and there were payments made to the estate
uh-huh.
and the insurance policy.
I mean, I'm just responding to the no remedy. He had a remedy against the main
problem. It's the tortfeasor.
Tortfeasor. Okay.
Let me ask you this then, and just out of curiosity, if this officer was reprimanded for having engaged in this kind of a high-speed chase, it was contrary to regulation, and he was allowed to go out back on the street, and he engaged in precisely the same conduct again. I mean, that seems like a problem. What is there to stop that from happening in the future?
Well, what would stop that from happening is hopefully departmental enforcement. But again, as it applies to this particular case, Officer Hayashi was a model police officer. He had never engaged in any violations, had no discipline, and this was the first time he had even ever been accused of violating a pursuit policy. So there were no prior actions. If, in fact, there is an officer that is repeatedly violating the law, I guess what we would hope is that the chief of police and the administration would handle that internally. But as it applies to the tort claim here, the estate could have sued Officer Hayashi individually, if they could show the Florida as a sovereign immunity statute. I know, Judge Rosenbaum, you were a Florida practitioner. There is a sovereign immunity statute in Florida, and the plaintiff could have sued Officer Hayashi if the plaintiff believed that he engaged in willful, malicious, and intentional, egregious misconduct. But even out of the gate, the plaintiffs never made those allegations, even before the 15th Judicial Circuit in Palm Beach. So that was really never an allegation here. The only allegations that were brought were against the city. So even the plaintiff did not believe that this was a malicious, willful, intentional violation by Officer Hayashi. As to the issue of the Berlin and Fisher cases, and I did want to touch on that. I know Fisher is the one that was discussed more. The Fisher case did not expressly refer to the statutory duty in 316.072, but Fisher cites to Bryant, and that was the issue in Bryant. The Bryant case actually involved the driver, and what the statute says is that officers owe this duty to drive reasonably safe like any other driver, but is not absolved of that duty in the statute 316.072 as to all persons. All persons in this case would include Taylor Geese, and in all persons in the Bryant case included the fleeing driver. So it's all persons. But what the court did there was said, as a matter of policy, we are not going to extend all persons to a driver who is breaking the law and fleeing from the police. And the appellant here takes no issue with that case. So really what the issue in this case is, do we classify the passenger more as a lawbreaker or more as a bystander? A bystander is someone who's not involved at all. And what the court in Berlin said, and what the court in Fisher said, is that we are going to classify the passenger more as a participant than an innocent bystander for policy reasons, as Judge Grant read from the opinion in Fisher, is that this is strictly a policy decision that we are going to classify the passenger more as a lawbreaker than as an innocent bystander. And what counsel's, what the appellant's brief notes numerous times is the way the question was certified by the Third District Court of Appeal, where it stated, do the police owe a duty of care to the passenger of a fleeing vehicle who is also involved in the chase? And what the appellant has argued is that Claypool was not involved in the chase, but Claypool was involved in the chase. She was in the car that was being chased. And Claypool, factually, sits no differently than Fisher. Because in the Fisher case, if we examine the facts, there is no indication whatsoever that Mr. Fisher did anything wrong in that case. He just happened to be a passenger in a vehicle that was fleeing from the police. So if Ms. Claypool was not involved in the chase, then neither was Mr. Fisher. Neither was the plaintiff, the decedent of the plaintiff in the Bridges case, which was the Middle District of Florida case. Neither was the decedent in the Berlin case. All of these cases, there's five cases consecutively, including this one, this Judge Middlebrook's decision, that have all unanimously determined, without contradiction from any opinion of any Florida state or federal court, that there is no duty owed to those that are in the law-breaking vehicle. One of those opinions involved the driver. Four consecutive opinions now have involved the passenger, and all four of them have been unanimous that there is no duty owed to the passenger for the reasons that Judge Grant pointed out in Fisher, is the incredible burden this would impose upon the police. I also wanted to address counsel's school bus argument or hostage argument. Judge Sasser, who's an extremely capable judge who passed away tragically, decided this on a motion to dismiss. And what Judge Sasser said, and I'm not saying what she pronounced verbally in court, what her order said was, I want to see how the record develops and see if this is a willing passenger or an involuntary passenger, that we're just here on a motion to dismiss, whereas Fisher was decided on a summary judgment. What counsel argues, there should possibly be an exception, that this rule in Fisher goes too far. But the problem we have with that here is that this is not the case to create the exception, because Kaylee Claypool was a willing passenger in the vehicle. It was her boyfriend's vehicle. He was extremely inebriated, apparently had gotten inebriated with her in a very short period of time, and she went in his vehicle, and she is, by all accounts, a willing passenger. And again, I know Judge Rosenbaum, you practiced in Florida. Just as an example, I thought this morning, Florida has a sort of abrogated negligent infliction of emotional distress. So if someone witnesses a motor vehicle accident and is emotionally traumatized by witnessing the motor vehicle accident, that person cannot sue the negligent driver because there was no impact. There's an impact rule. The witness was not impacted. This is all created by case law. Florida courts, however, have created exceptions to the impact rule, one being negligent mishandling of a dead body. So if one's relative is mishandled by a funeral home or a mortuary, they can sue. But that exception was created in a case where there was a negligent mishandling of a dead body. It had to apply to that case. That exception of the negligent mishandling of a dead body was not created in a case where someone witnessed a car accident. Here on the facts of this case, we do not have a hostage or a kidnapped victim or a school bus. And so there is no reason to create that exception in this case. Furthermore, this notion was not something that was novelly raised before Judge Sasser or in this case before Judge Middlebrooks or before this court. This was discussed in Fisher in a footnote where the court, there's a concurring opinion by Chief Justice Schwartz, and he indicated, I may have decided this case differently if there was a hostage or kidnapped victim here, but because it is a willing occupant, there's no reason to decide it differently. So
I want to make sure I know the four cases you say that are consecutive opinions with passengers. I assume it's Fisher. Bryant was a driver. What are the other passenger cases?
The passenger cases, and by the way, I've included Judge Middlebrook's opinion below in this case.
Okay, so then the three. So it's, what are the three?
Fisher, Bridges, and Berlin.
Okay.
Fisher and Berlin are both Florida District Court of Appeal cases.
What is Bridges?
Bridges is a Middle District of Florida opinion wherein the court was the estate.
Is it published or non-published?
I believe it is unpublished.
But it's district court, so it doesn't really matter. It's not Florida court doing Florida.
Right, it is a Middle District
okay,
of
so
Florida
basically
opinion.
You got,
unpublished.
I mean, in all fairness, to your opponent, basically you got two passenger cases. You can't say there have been four passenger cases consistently. You've
right.
The two Florida passenger. Okay, I've got it now.
Right. The Bridges sure. case is a
I've got it. You've
Orlando
answered my
division.
Question. Thank
right.
you.
Right. And essentially, the Bridges case was factually was no different than Fisher. It was just argument that we have an innocent passenger, and why should we not allow an innocent passenger to claim when the passenger is not the one fleeing from police? And a Middle District of Judge essentially just did exactly what Judge Middlebrooks did here, was say that that the Fisher case is essentially effectively binding precedent upon a federal trial court and adopted Fisher. But Fisher is, in all relevant respects, on all fours with this case. Fisher factually is-
I think we got it.
Right. Probably more disturbing factually than this case because the officers apparently chased the person and then when he crashed, the officers left the scene. So I will yield my time unless the court has any additional questions.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Your Honors. Judge Hull, I went back and reviewed the complaint. It's a common law negligence claim, but to be clear, the creation of the duty.
You've litigated it under statute, so I'm not sure it's waived, but I just want to make sure I wasn't missing that you were really traveling on a statutory negligence claim.
You're correct. We're not. It's not a statutory claim. The source of the duty, or this an independent source of a duty here, is pursuant to the Florida statute, so okay. Which is a distinction under Florida law from when a party brings a Florida statutory claim.
Okay.
Or like a Section 1983 claim would be an example
Thank
under
you.
Federal law. Okay. Your Honor, I think when you asked the question about the cases, there are two cases. The first case, which they cite, if I may just briefly, Berlin, it is a three-sentence opinion from the First District Court of Appeal, which the defendant did not address below. It doesn't tell us anything in that case about the facts. It certainly does not, again, address whether there's a statutory or the source of the duty is the statute. So that decision as well would not be binding within the First District Court of Appeal as to the issues we have before the court today. All we know from that case is there was a passenger and the court held that there was no duty owed to that passenger. We don't know, again, involved in the crime, involved in the chase. We know literally nothing about the facts of that case.
You ought to say about Berlin, it's a stolen car.
What's that?
You ought to say about Berlin, it's a stolen car, so there's more of an inference the passenger was involved. That's what you should say about Berlin.
Thank you, okay. Your Honor. Yeah, you yeah. fair enough. That's an excellent point. Thank you.
And it says, besides that, it is two sentences, and it means nothing.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Fisher is your problem.
I understand
Fisher
that Fisher
is what
Fisher,
we're bound by, which the colleagues have tried to say help us with Fisher. That's Fisher makes it very clear from a policy standpoint, we're not doing this.
I understand that. If I may, just one thing about the policy discussion there concerned with whether there had to be knowledge as to whether officers had to know or they should know. And that was based because the trial court had decided the case based on whether there was knowledge. I'm not here addressing whether there should be knowledge of the passenger. All I'm saying is that a duty of care is owed to a passenger who's not involved in the crime, not involved, just as there is to third parties. And I don't believe that Fisher has addressed that regarding 3.6, the statute, the sources of the duty under the Florida statutes. And in any event, to the extent that this court thinks that is binding, and I understand this court may especially be inclined to think that, I would alternatively ask that this court certify a question to the state Supreme Court on the issue. Certainly, the only decision, again, is under Brown, where the court held that there was a broad foreseeable zone of risk there, which was owed. They certainly didn't draw the line between, they were not asked to confront the issue, which this court has here today. But if anything, one 20-year-old state case from the Third District Court of Appeal should not squarely address the issue under Florida law as to deny my client a right to a jury trial in the case. I don't know that I have anything else to say other than I will, counsel, mentioned the sovereign immunity statute, and the sovereign immunity statute, which they do not rely on here, that does address the broad protection that is given to police officers under when they are operating pursuant to a written guideline from their law enforcement agency, which authorizes the chase, and it is authorized if you have suspicion of a forcible felony. Here, the only offense that was a speeding infraction by the officer. So there is a broad, when we get into the policy decisions, we're certainly not saying that law enforcement is not entitled to and is not already given by the legislature enormous deference to engage in high-speed chases. What they're not given deference to do is to engage in a chase for a nonviolent offense. That's not permitted. It's expressly prohibited under their the city guidelines, their training, and it's expressly prohibited under Florida law. So we would ask this court, obviously, to reverse and alternatively to certify a question to the state Supreme Court. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel.